Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio.
My name's Regan. I work for Anthony J. Lyon, Detective Bureau. They call me the Lion's Eye.
Sunday at 8:30, and CBS brings you Jeff Regan, Investigator, starring Frank Graham as Regan, with Frank Nelson as Anthony J. Lyon. So stand by for mystery and suspense and adventure in tonight's transcribed story, No Sad Clowns for Me.
There was a tall clown and a short clown juggling this one, plus a sleek but overage destroyer named Ruth that wore tights and trained tigers. All parts of a big circus playing a small town of 649 people. And somewhere along the midway, a joker wanted to cut me down to size. 6 foot box size. I wasn't thinking about the circus when I went to the detective bureau Wednesday morning, but my boss was. The Lion was up to his knuckles in...
Green, my boy. I've just about decided to have our whole office done over in green.
Why the sea of $1 bills?
A client, my boy, with payment in advance.
Those bills look like they've been papering a rat's nest.
They're all in pieces, my boy, but they're good.
You'd know.
Yeah, of course. Notice when I hold this one against this 300-watt light, the paper's made with silk threads. Fitting the torn bills together, they come to $67, Jeffrey.
And the client is...
See this canvas bag?
Bottle top?
It's full of nickels, dimes, and quarters, Jeffrey. With the $1 bills, it makes a very nice retainer of $75.
For which we do what?
Nothing.
Now, wait a minute, Fatso. You mean a client walked in here, laid down 75 bucks to hire us to do nothing?
Exactly.
Duck, there's a curve on this pitch.
No, no, my boy. The whole thing's perfectly legitimate. Our client walked in about an hour ago.
Description?
Well, he was a tall man, eccentric.
Go on.
45 or 50 years old, long, pale, stringy, yellowish hair, like an actor, and oddly dressed.
This keeps getting better.
Well, he had on a single-breasted pinstripe suit and tennis sneakers, a rope for a belt.
Does he fly?
No. Anyway, Jeffrey, he put the money down. He saw I was worried about the small denominations, and then he said, "It's not brass." Just like that.
It's not brass.
A circus expression, my boy. Then he leaned right over this desk and said slowly, showing his big teeth, Jeffrey, "When a little old man named Crackley comes in, don't take his case."
And you went for that?
Of course. We do nothing, no trouble at all.
Lyon, it could be we're in trouble. Give me our client's name and address and the retainer. I'll take it back.
Well, unfortunately...
Don't tell me. You didn't get the name and address.
Well, you see, my boy, he was in a great
hurry.
You
gave him a receipt for the 75?
Oh, of course. Everything very business-like.
That ties us into the case, but good. Now, no matter what happens, we're mixed up in it.
You're borrowing trouble.
We bought it.
Oh, relax, my boy.
We gotta get that receipt.
Forget it. Just be grateful.
Okay, Lyon. But if Crackley shows up, be careful. I turned and started for the door. I knew client was a crank. We'd have to be more than careful. But I couldn't dump the trouble into the Lion's lap. I slammed the door on my way out. The noise made a little old guy jump. He was standing in the hall, just outside our door. It wasn't hard to figure who he was. Crackley?
You know my name?
Well, I do now. You're on your way into the Lyon Detective Bureau.
Yes.
I'm Regan.
The Lion's Eye?
That's what they call me.
You're the man I came here to see. You were highly recommended.
I'd like to talk to you, Crackley. I know a place they'll let us sit down for 50 cents.
Yeah, I could use a drink.
I thought maybe. We went to Dugan's bar. Crackley was a little guy, but smart, almost sharp. He had an outdoor face, tanned with deep wrinkles like closed eyes in his forehead. Like he had a lot on his mind, and he wanted to talk.
I'm the owner of a circus, Mr. Regan.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, you don't understand. I don't know if you can imagine the responsibilities of a circus owner. To his employees, I mean. They're all specialists. And if we were to close up and go out of business, well, there'd be no place for them to go.
Except another circus.
Oh, circus business has fallen off since the war years, Mr. Regan.
Oh, I hadn't heard.
Business is terrible.
Oh, sure.
Another drink, gentlemen?
No, thanks.
No, I don't.
Now, why did you come to the Lion Detective Bureau?
I want you to find a man named Bliss.
Why?
Well, Bliss has been investing in my circus.
Putting money into a losing proposition?
No, it's not unusual. People that love the circus, especially wealthy people, enjoy putting their money into things that give them pleasure.
Bliss is missing?
Oh, for the last 3 weeks.
And the money has stopped coming into the circus?
Well, yes, Mr. Egan.
When did you last see Bliss?
The fact is, I've never seen Bliss.
But he puts money into your circus?
Through his lawyer. Right now, we're playing Bliss's hometown. I'd hope to meet him in person.
What would you say, Mr. Crackley, if I told you a strange man came into our bureau this morning and paid us not to take your case?
Who was? Someone's following me?
Well, I don't know, but... Yeah, Mr. Crackley, someone's following you.
Mr. Egan, what are you looking at?
You mean, what is it looking at us?
Where?
Stay put, I'll be right back. I ran to the window. The face that had been peering at us whipped out of sight. A couple of winos in Dugan's door cost me 2 or 3 seconds getting out, and that was enough. When I got to the street, it was empty. The man with the long, stringy, yellowish hair who'd been watching us was gone. I went back into the bar. That's when I got a second surprise. Crackley was gone, too. A quick call to Billboard gave me what I needed. The Crackley Great Combined Circus was playing a town of 650 people. A place called Crossroads in the foothills, about a 2-hour drive from L.A. The crank with the yellow hair on the rope belt was somehow tied up with that Crackley circus. Yellow hair had the Lion's signed receipt. I had to get it back. So I got into my car and headed for Crossroads. And when I got there, funny thing, the town was deserted. But the circus midway was jammed. It looked like Crossroads' whole 649 population was at that circus.
Hot dogs, hot puppies, they're delicious, they're nutritious. Step up and get one.
How much?
Eh?
A hot dog, how much?
Oh, yeah, hot dog. Hey, you mean you're going to buy one?
Why not?
Nobody buys nothing in this cheap burg.
Business looks pretty good to me. Everybody in town here at the circus.
Don't cost them nothing.
Oh, no?
Old Crackley's putting on a show for nothing. Making it look good for Bliss, his silent partner.
The show's papered, then. Annie Oakley's for free, huh?
Say, you Bliss?
And if I am?
I ain't said nothing.
Yeah. How much for the hot dog?
2 bits.
I paid for the hot dog, walked along the midway asking questions wherever I could get an answer. It was like the dog peddler had said. Crackley had papered the house, bought tickets for everyone in town to guarantee business. We weren't supposed to take the case, but the situation was interesting, and I got to wondering about Bliss, how he fitted in. But then I remembered I was here to get our receipt back, so I bypassed the midway, walked around to the performers' tents. No gaudy signs here, no freak shows, palmists or bally. And I found a woman. Or rather, she found me.
Regan?
Huh. Nice to be known.
This is my tent, Mr. Regan. Please come in.
She was tall, slim. You could spend time watching her. Young, but not too young. Her hair was long and black, almost to the roots. Her face was firm, beautiful, but her eyes had already been there and back. Then we were in her tent, nobody around except the tigers just outside, and she got nearer, and I could see more.
Regan.
Nice tent.
I got a message.
Uh-huh.
Go home.
That's your message?
Go back to L.A., Crackley says.
You a friend of Crackley's?
He saw you in the midway. He said, that's Regan. That's the Lion's Eye from L.A. that ought to go home.
You sure it wasn't Bliss?
You know Bliss?
Oh, yeah. A very close personal friend of mine.
You're clever, Regan.
It's my business.
Make sure your business doesn't get you into trouble.
Hey, that tiger's close.
Yeah, I work the big cats. They hate me and I hate them. I like them kept near me. Gives me a chance to whip them through the bars whenever I'm feeling blue.
Lady.
Yeah?
What's your name?
I got a surprise for you, Mr. Regan.
I've had lots today.
My name's Crackley.
You're married to old Crackley, the circus owner?
I married his son, Mr. Regan.
His son?
Yeah, George Crackley. The little runt that's standing in back of you.
I turned.
George was there, all right. And he was little, maybe 4 feet 10 inches tall, wearing a clown suit. His face was in queer makeup, chalk white, bruised blue. He was supposed to look like a sad clown. And he was.
What are you doing around here?
Looking for a man.
She looked like a man?
No.
You're after my wife, too. You were standing real close.
Guys fall in love with me, Regan. My husband's a poor sport about it.
Oh, make sure you don't wake up dead, mister. Make sure you don't get dropped on.
I'll be real careful.
George, if you don't get out of here,
I'll... Ruth, don't you think it's time you were getting into your costume? The walk around will begin in 4 or 5 minutes.
A tall clown filled the opening to the tent. When he spoke, Ruth began fumbling with the costume. Little George looked like he was going to cry, then walked out of the tent without a word. Ruth followed him. And I was left alone with a tall clown in makeup, with a red watermelon mouth and cold blue eyes.
I hated to interrupt, Mr. Regan, but Ruth must dress for the walk-around, as we of the circus call our opening parade.
You seem to have an effect on George, too.
Oh, George and I are partners. He's the sad, bruised clown, and I am the cruel clown. I frighten him, maul him, beat and bruise him with various objects. It amuses people.
Naturally.
We're all sadists at heart.
Maybe you can help me.
I'll try.
I'm looking for a tall, eccentric man. Wears tennis shoes. Rope for a belt. Has long, stringy, yellowish hair, you know him?
Oh.
I said, do you know him?
Of course. That would be Mr. Bliss.
Where can I find him?
As a matter of fact, Mr. Regan, I have a message from Mr. Bliss. He wants to see you.
Oh? Who will I say sent me?
Just the cruel clown. He'll know who you mean.
Where do I meet Bliss?
At his home. I'll tell you how to get there.
He did. I got into my car and started the drive to his shack. I'd meet him on his own terms at his place. It was a 15-minute drive, most of the way up a side road. I was almost there when a car pulled into the side road behind me, coming up fast, its headlights growing in my rearview mirror. I pulled over to let the speedball pass. He began to cut in on me. The trailer he had hitched on sideswiped me. I felt myself go against the steering post. Then I didn't feel anything for a long time. I'd been thrown clear of my car. When I came to, there was a huge man standing over me, black in the moonlight. My gun was gone. My hand caught at a club, and then I saw it wasn't a club, but a small, very small chair arm. Must have fallen from the trailer. The trailer was gone. The man started moving in.
Well, sweetheart.
Stand back.
Coming to, sweetheart.
Get back.
I got your gun, baby. I'm Logan, chief of police at Crossroads. Maybe I ought to take you into custody for reckless driving.
Logan, I'm a private detective from Los Angeles.
Well, why don't you get up from the ground and tell me about it? Here.
Yeah, thanks. Somebody ran me off the road on purpose. I think I know who.
That's so, sweetheart?
That's not all. There's something phony about that circus play in your town.
Oh, ain't no circus around here.
You're real funny.
Fact is, I'll make you a bet, baby. You can't show me no circus around these parts.
You seem sure of that.
Give you 20 to 1.
Let's go take a look.
All right.
We drove in his car to the circus lot. When we got there, we saw the lot was full of color. All of it moonlight. Vacant. Not a candy wrapper. The crackly great combined circus was gone. As though it had never existed.
This is CBS, and you are listening to No Sad Clowns for Me, tonight's adventure with Jeff Regan, investigator.
It started bad, and it got worse. Lion had us balled up in it like a cat in a fish line before I even heard of the case. Then I took over. I did fine. trying to get our receipt for $75 back, I got myself run off the road near the town of Crossroads, got my car smashed up. Then the chief of police told me that the crackly Great Combined Circus, where I'd spent an hour, wasn't there. And it wasn't. The chief of police thought this was real funny.
Where'd the circus go, sweetheart?
L.A., probably.
You're kind of slick.
Couldn't have been gone more than an hour. Look at those filled-in post holes.
You're a real bright fella.
And I know why I'd left in such a hurry.
Oh, you city fellas are real sharp-like.
The circus left because of a guy named Bliss.
What do you know about Bliss?
Bliss was putting money into a circus, not taking any out.
Keep talking.
Bliss gets tired of this, slaps an attachment on the circus. Crackly pulled the show out before it could be served.
Yeah, you're real smart. You'd better come along with me, sweetheart. We have, better have a little, talkie.
It hit the bullseye, and I got more than I bargained for. It seems Bliss had no friends, except Logan, who, being the local legal eagle, was also appointed by Bliss as his lawyer, having full power of attorney. Now Logan was ready to talk.
Bliss, now, he ain't no dummy. He was in the circus himself years ago, before he got wise and made a lot of dough in, plumbing fixers. Ain't no money in show business, sweetheart.
They tell me.
Now, Bliss, he ain't old, but he's kind of funny. All of a sudden, he wants to...
invest in a circus. Yeah. His old love. But he also wants to make some money out of it.
Oh, Bliss, he likes money. He married a circus gal years ago. Left her because she was draining away his salary.
How much money did Bliss put into the Crackley Circus?
Well, baby, Bliss bought in deep enough to own, 49% of the show.
Bliss isn't getting any money out of his investment, so he slaps an attachment on the show. Crackley gets wind of it, pulls the show out.
You were right up to there, sweetheart.
Talk, Logan.
I got a note from Bliss just this afternoon. Told me to lift the attachment order. It was a real happy note.
Where's Bliss now?
Honest, baby, I don't know. He's queer. He's just gone.
Bliss skipped out on his wife. That can't be his real name.
No, I can't tell you much. Promised Bliss he wouldn't, but his name used to be Elmer C. Bickle.
You got a phone, Logan?
Here you are, baby. But get the charges.
I was getting an idea. Another reason for the show's moving. One thing was sure. Bliss was in it up to his ears. It was 2 a.m. now, and I got the lion at home.
Yeah, Anthony J. Lyon, Detective Bureau, Home Office. We never sleep.
And why haven't you been asleep?
Jeffrey. Well, I've had some very important work to do tonight.
Such as?
Pasting those dollar bills together, if you must know.
You're graduating from kindergarten right now, Fatso. Get your car out.
At this hour?
I'm in Crossroads, California, slaving for the agency, and you can help.
What can I do?
Get all the stuff you can on a guy named Elmer C. Bickle.
Bickle?
Bickle.
Oh.
Joined the circus years ago, married somebody, left his wife. Check variety.
That'll take all night, Jeffrey.
You've got 1 hour. Oh, another thing, Fatso. Check the theatrical hotels, places where show people, circus people put up. Now, here's what we need. A line on anybody connected with the Crackley Great Combined...
I can give you that, sweetheart.
What?
You what?
I know where they probably hold in.
Lyon, forget that last, but check Bickle. I hung up, and Logan said he'd heard the performers in Crackley Circus usually stayed at the Fossman Hotel in Los Angeles. So I called the Fossman Hotel.
Oh, hello.
The desk clerk sounded wide awake.
Fossman Hotel?
Has Mr. Crackley checked in?
Who's asking?
Regan, private investigator.
Well, we certainly could have used a private investigator this morning.
Why?
Heavens, the circus came in without telling us. Everybody's so upset.
You better make sure they pay in advance.
Oh, well, Mr. Crackley paid everything in advance. He has a fine suite of rooms. But there's such confusion. I just don't know what to do.
You wouldn't. Now, about Crackley.
I'll ring. But he's probably asleep anyway.
Hello?
Crackley, this is Jeff Regan.
Oh, Regan.
Why did you run away?
I don't know. I mean, we had to leave because we were so low on funds that the sheriff's office is going to attach the show. We heard of the order and left town to leave their jurisdiction.
Yeah, sure. Well, your worries are over, Crackley. I've found Bliss for you. Bickle, too.
Oh, no, it's impossible. Well, I mean...
Yeah, I know what you mean. It hit me. The circus was making money. Crackley had paid his hotel bill in advance. Fine suite of rooms. Well, he'd probably been keeping a double set of books cheating Bliss. I got Logan, got in his car, and drove back to the deserted circus lot. We drove fast. The circus had pulled out in the middle of the night for another reason. And I knew now we'd better look for that reason. The lot was deserted. Low, cold mist over the ground. Gray morning. A small animal moved through the mist like a creature from another world. A small dog. He'd found what we couldn't see. He had something in his mouth. A cap with a red pom-pom on its pointed end. A clown's cap, stained with blood. Logan had men digging within minutes. One of the filled post holes seemed larger than the rest. This was it.
We found him, Mr. Regan.
Yeah. Let me see his face.
Kind of muddy.
Still in makeup. Tall, cruel clown.
You know him?
Yeah. You too. Pull the skull cap off.
Poor Mr.
Bickle, alias Bliss. Long, stringy, yellowish hair like an actor. Only he isn't playing at being dead. Come on, Logan. Keys to your car. I've got an appointment at the Fossman Hotel. I took Logan's car, made the 2-hour trip back to L.A. I phoned the Lion as soon as I hit town. I got the complete rundown on Bickle. Then I went to the Fossman Hotel. I asked the room clerk for old Crackley's room number. It was 203. I didn't wait to be announced. You should lock your door, Crackley. You could get company you might not enjoy.
Well, I've been waiting for you.
I know why you pulled out of Crossroads so fast last night, Crackley.
Well, I don't know anything.
I found Bliss.
I'm not interested in Bliss anymore.
Then maybe you're interested in Bickle, the tall clown.
Now, please, Mr. Reed.
Bliss joined the circus under his real name, Bickle, to check up on his investment.
The tall clown was Bliss?
Yeah. He was eccentric, but not eccentric enough to throw his money away. But he got more than he bargained for.
No, please. Now, leave me alone.
He's dead, Crackley.
Dead. Yes, dead.
You pulled out of Crossroads last night because a man was killed and buried there on the lot.
But I didn't kill him.
But you know who did?
No.
I had the Lion check on Bickle. It seems he married a Ruth Sandusky in Chicago, April 18th, 1930. Now, Ruth Sandusky was only a kid then, featured in an animal act.
My son George married her in good faith, Mr. Regan. I was against the marriage.
Where's George now?
But I can't tell you.
I left him in Crackley's suite of rooms, checked the front desk for George's room. Was told he lived in his own small trailer. But when he was in town, he always parked it down by the circus warehouse. That's where I headed. The circus warehouse was down by the tracks. It was a raw wood building that had fallen in on its bones. Most of the circus trucks had unloaded. Things were pretty quiet. I got out of the car, walked around. The rear of the warehouse was parked a small trailer, beat up. The one that had forced me off the highway near Crossroads. Inside, I found Ruth. Ruth Sandusky.
Regan.
Married Elmer C. Bickle in Chicago, April 18th, 1930.
You're a real bright eye.
You kind of like being married, don't you, Ruth? So much you get married twice.
Girl needs a man.
With money.
Bickle ran away from me the week we played Chillicothe. The only way I knew he was alive, he used to put crazy ads in the trades every Christmas.
You'll be sitting pretty when old man Crackley dies and George inherits the circus.
Oh, I try not to think of such things.
Bickle joined the circus 3 weeks ago. He recognized you, wanted you again, moved in on George. The thing is, you were still married to Bickle. You'd kind of overlooked getting a divorce, which meant you weren't legally married to George, meaning you had no future claim on the circus.
You won't tell George. I'll make it worth your while, Mr. Regan.
Trouble is, lady, George saw Bickle, the new clown, moving in on him. And easily, too. You were afraid to hold Bickle off, afraid he might yell bigamy. Real cozy for you, Ruth. Both husbands, clowns in the same act.
You better stop talking, Mr. Regan.
George had to move out of your tent, sleep in his trailer. He was crazy jealous. That's why he tried to finish me by driving me off the road. He thought I was moving in, too.
Stop it while you still got the chance.
Bickle said come back to me or I yelled bigamy, and you killed him.
Stop it!
Only one thing, lady. You didn't know that Bickle and Bliss were the same man.
Bliss?
Yeah, the angel. The guy that was pouring all that money into the circus.
Bickle was Bliss. I'm still married to him, legally.
That's almost right.
Yeah. Yes, it was bigamy. What do I want with George now, as the wife of Bliss, or whatever he called himself now? I'll inherit all his dough.
You killed Bliss.
What? Crackley thinks his son did it. George will go to the gas chamber for me. I'm a bigamist, Mr. Regan, so give me 2 years.
Ruth, no. No, you won't get rid of me that easy.
George.
I heard what you were...
Little George, the sad, bruised clown, stood in the doorway of a small trailer. It was like he didn't see me, only Ruth, his almost wife. But he'd heard plenty.
I thought you killed him because he was molesting you.
Shut up, George.
I thought you killed him because you loved me.
You stay away from me, George.
Ruth ran out of the trailer, followed by George. He slammed the door to hold me back. I got the door open just in time to see little George slip into the circus warehouse. I ran after them, fast. Inside the warehouse, it was dim. There was a sharp smell of circus animals. Little George was flexing his muscles for the first time in his life.
I won't let him get you. I'll take you from the gas chamber.
A superhuman strength had come into him. He had Ruth by the hair and was forcing her into an animal cage. The tiger was crouched in the corner of the cage, ready to jump. I grabbed both George and Ruth by the hair and pulled them back. I kicked the cage shut.
Why didn't you let me finish?
Sorry, George. The state will want witnesses when Ruth finishes her act in the gas chamber. That wound it up. I called Sanducci of homicide. When they came to take Ruth away, I saw little George, the fall guy, standing near his trailer, all alone. 2 hours later, I checked in with the lion at the office.
We're in the money. We're in the money.
Still at the paste pot, Lion?
Oh, yes, my boy. I've just finished pasting the last bill together. The silk threads match perfectly.
Nice, neat job.
Oh, Jeffrey, you just don't know how hard I work for our future.
Bank should take these, all right.
Now, I slaved all night, my boy.
The only thing, money doesn't belong to us.
Yeah, I think I'll just press the bill so the bank will be sure. What?
Money isn't ours.
But, what do you mean?
I got a call from Logan. Says he found your receipt in the Bliss shack. I had to tell him we got the $75 to keep us from taking the case.
Oh.
So the Bliss estate demands its money back.
It's all your fault, Jeffrey.
Yeah, I guess maybe.
If you hadn't opened
well,
your...
Well, I guess I'll just have to keep this $100.
What's that you have?
$100 bill. Got two more, just like it.
Jeffrey... But who...
Oh, Crackley gave it to me.
Well...
He thought his son George had killed Bickle. When we proved it was Ruth, he gave it.
Oh, how could I have ever doubted you, Jeffrey?
Another thing, Lion.
Yes?
Meant to tell you, those bills you pasted together...
Oh, I worked so hard over them.
Well, the bank would have fitted the bills together for you.
Yes. Oh, no!
Jeff Regan, Investigator, is written by William Frug and Gilbert Thomas, directed by Sterling Tracy, and stars Frank Graham as Regan with Frank Nelson as Anthony J. Lyon. Original music is by Dick Arant. Jeff Regan, Investigator, is transcribed each week at the same time over CBS. Bob Stevenson speaking and inviting you to be with us again next Sunday at 8:30 for more suspense and mystery and adventure with Jeff Regan, Investigator.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Another 5-minute mystery.
Okay. Homicide Division, Inspector Nichols speaking. Oh, Ralph Dean. The guy that backs all those nightclubs with his dough? Where? Right, I'll be there in 10 minutes. So you two are Thomas and Gerald Klein.
That's right, Inspector. We're brothers.
Where's the body?
That's right, fellas. The coroner'd like to make his examination as soon as possible.
It's in this next room.
You see, we're both bachelors, and we have our living quarters here above the nightclub.
Right in here, Inspector.
Not much of a mess. Mustn't have been a struggle.
There wouldn't be much blood in a death like this. Death was too instantaneous.
As we said, Inspector, Dean came to Thomas and me and asked if he could come up here to talk over a business deal with this Johnson fellow. Dean had put up the money for his club, too, but Johnson wasn't cutting in with enough dough.
Was Dean financing your club, too?
Why, yes.
But to get back to the story, Inspector, Dean and Johnson came up here to this room. After about half an hour, Thomas and I heard 2 shots. We happened to be in the kitchen just below here.
We ran right up, but Johnson had beat it.
But not before he stopped to plant my necktie in Dean's hand to frame us, make it look like I killed Dean.
How about that necktie in the victim's hand, Coroner?
It looked as though Dean ripped it off the neck of his killer.
See? Johnson's a smart operator. He knew it would look that way.
Can you remove the tie from his hand, Coroner?
Yes, if you want me to break his hand. It's a case of cadaveric spasm, Inspector. Dean has a death clutch on it, and the only way you'll remove it is by breaking the hand.
Johnson must have gone up into our wardrobe, grabbed one of Gerald's ties and torn it, then put it into Dean's hand and forced the fingers around it.
Yeah, Johnson was jealous of our business and was double-crossing Dean, so he thought this would be a way to kill 2 birds with 1 stone.
He killed Dean and planted suspicion on us.
You might as well store your alibi, boys. Johnson had nothing to do with this. Gerald, you fired the fatal shots as your brother Thomas stood by and watched. I'm arresting both of you for Dean's murder.
Do you know what evidence proves Gerald pulled the trigger? In 1 minute, we'll be back with the solution. But first... the inspector and his explanation.
Johnson couldn't have planted that necktie, Gerald. That tie of yours in Dean's hand is the clue proving your guilt. As you walked close to him and shot, he grabbed at you, caught hold of your tie, and in falling, tore the tie off. When a person dies suddenly, as did Dean, they often clutch tenaciously as to whatever happens to be in their hands. Their fingers are set in an unmovable grasp. In that case, it's a medical impossibility for anyone to place something in the victim's hand and cause that dead hand to grasp it as tightly as Dean has your tie. That clue in Dean's hand is going to be worth 2 killers in the electric chair.
Ladies and gentlemen, we suggest that you pay particular attention to an important announcement, which will be given at the end of tonight's program.
The story you're about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to personnel division. A resident of your city files a report of robbery and assault. The suspect, a rookie police officer. Your job, arrest him.
If you want a long cigarette, smoke the best of all long cigarettes. Smoke extra mild Fatima. Yes, Fatima is the king-size cigarette, which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos, superbly blended to make it extra mild. To give Fatima a much different, much better flavor and aroma than any other long cigarette. That's why Fatima has more than doubled its smokers coast to coast. Enjoy extra mild Fatima yourself. Best of all, long cigarettes.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, transcribed in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, April 9th. It was foggy in Los Angeles. We were working a day watch out of personnel. My partner's Ben Romero, the boss is Deputy Chief Holman, Commander BIA. My name's Friday. We're on the way over from the city hall, and it was 5:25 p.m. when we got to Central Division. The assembly room.
See him, Joe?
Yeah. It looks like him over there. Hi. You Russell Clark?
Yeah, that's right.
Friday and Romero, personnel.
All right.
Lieutenant Drummond over at BIA would like to talk to you.
All right. When do you want to see me?
Right now.
Okay. All right, we're looking for Captain. Okay, let's go. What do they want to see me about, you know?
Drummond will tell you.
Okay.
How long you been on the job, Clark?
About 2.5 months.
How do you like it?
Oh, I like it fine. Wife doesn't think much of it. She wanted me to stay at my old job.
What was that?
Selling insurance. I like to have me home nights. Doesn't like to be alone, especially now.
Yeah?
Well, she's expecting you in a couple of months. You know how they get.
Yeah. That's gross, yeah.
Hey, I put in a request for day work. You think that's why personnel wants to see me?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Boy, I'd sure like to get that day watch.
Yeah.
Is that the way you fellas started?
I did, yeah. You started in traffic, didn't you, Ben?
Yeah, uh-huh. Had 9 months, Ellen. Go ahead, Clark.
No, thanks. I have to be on the job at 6. Think it's going to take very long?
I don't know.
Hi, Friday.
Hi.
Right in, Lieutenant's waiting. Personnel, Coleman. Lieutenant?
Yeah, come in.
This is Officer Clark, Lieutenant Drummond.
How do you do, sir? Oh, hey, Clark. Sit down.
Thanks. A
couple of questions for you.
Yes, sir?
You were on special duty at the Olympic Auditorium last night, is that right?
Yes, sir, for the fights.
Anything unusual happen out there last night?
Well, it wasn't very important, Lieutenant. Mm-hmm. After the fights, a drunk fell down the stairs on the way out of the auditorium, broke his arm. I took him to Georgia Street, and they took care of the arm, and I drove him home. He's pretty drunk.
Why didn't you book the man?
I didn't think it was necessary.
How long you been with the department, Clark?
2.5 months, sir.
Didn't you know he should have been booked for violation of 4127A LAMC?
Well, the man was in pretty bad shape, Lieutenant. Broken arm. I guess I didn't think the law was that strict.
Law's there for a purpose. You decided to forget it, now you're in a mess, right up to your neck.
I don't understand.
You remember the name of that drunk you took care of last night?
Yes, sir. His name was Stacy. He lives out in West L.A. What's the matter, Lieutenant?
That drunk, Mr. Stacy, wants to file a complaint against you.
What for?
He claims you took him back at the auditorium, beat him up, broke his arm, and robbed him of $128.
Oh, he's crazy. He's lying. I didn't do that.
Got his word against yours, Clark. Facts seem to favor him.
But I can prove it. Well, there was at least a couple of dozen people around. There was a doctor, he can tell you.
Maybe you better take it from the beginning, Clark. Exactly how did it happen?
I was right after the fights. I was on duty in the lobby, and I saw a bunch of people crowding around the foot of the stairs.
Yeah.
I went over to see what the trouble was, and they were looking at this man lying on the pavement. It was Stacy, a doctor, was examining him.
This doctor, did he identify himself?
Yeah. I asked for his identification. He showed it to me. Gave me a card. He was a doctor, all right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, he told me that he'd seen Stacy fall down the stairs coming out of the auditorium. Said that Stacy had broken his left arm.
What'd you do then?
Well, the doc said it'd be okay to move him, so I helped him into my car and took him down to Georgia Street. He was so drunk he could hardly stand up. The attendants at Georgia Street took care of his arm. Well, they can tell you all about this.
Maybe, but they can't help you out as witnesses. You could have beaten up Stacy, robbed him, then taken him to Georgia Street.
But I didn't, Lieutenant. I tell you that Stacy's lying.
What'd you do when you left Georgia Street?
Well, I drove into Central and told him what happened. I told the watch commander I was going to drive this Stacy home, and he warned me about it. Guess I should have known better, but... Well, I swear to you that Stacy's lying.
You should have known better. Where'd you go after you left Central?
Well, I drove him home. On the way, he said he was hungry, so I stopped. I bought him a sandwich and some black coffee. Kept telling me what a nag his wife was, said he was afraid to go home.
Go on.
Well, when I got him to his place, his wife started chewing me out. I just said goodnight and left.
That's it, huh?
That's it. So help me, that's exactly what happened.
Now, how about the doctor at the auditorium, the one who saw Stacy fall? Did you get his name and address?
Well, no, Lieutenant, I didn't. I didn't think it was necessary.
How about the crowd that was standing around? Did you spot anybody you know?
No, I didn't. They're just a bunch of people coming out of the fights.
Then you haven't got anyone to corroborate your story.
But all those people saw it. There must have been a couple of dozen of them.
What are their names?
I don't know. All I know is I didn't beat him up and I didn't take his money. I tell you, the Stacy's lying.
You could be lying. We got no proof either way.
I'm not lying, Lieutenant. I didn't do it.
We might believe you, Clark. It doesn't make any difference. If this man files a 211 against you, it's got to be settled in court.
But I didn't do it. I tell you, I swear I didn't.
Just a minute. Mike, send in Mr. and Mrs. Stacy, will you? You can hear the story the way we get it from Stacy and his wife.
I'd like to hear it. I don't know why he's doing this. Tell me, I helped him all I could.
Look, Jerry, there he is. That's the one.
Yeah, that's him, Chief.
Now, wait a minute, Mr. Stacy. What's this all about?
Hold it, Clark. Mr. Stacy, would you repeat the same story you told us this morning, please?
You know what I told you, Chief. You had the stenographer take it all down. It's the same thing.
Like to have you repeat it in front of Officer Clark here. He's entitled to know what you're charging him with.
A man like that's entitled to nothing. You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Look, lady, your husband's lying.
Don't call my husband a liar. You're not a policeman. You're a hoodlum.
All right, wait a minute.
I'd like to know what this city's coming to. Cops going around beating up private citizens. Who do we trust if we can't trust a policeman?
Just a minute, please.
You don't know, Captain. You should have seen my husband when that officer brought him home last night. Arm all bandaged, his face all cut up. He was hurt so bad he could hardly stand up.
He was too drunk to stand up, lady.
Don't you get fresh with me, man.
All right, that's enough.
This cop got hold of me as I was coming out of the fights. Took me in back of the auditorium. Told me if I didn't hand over my wallet, he'd book me on a drunk charge.
Were you drunk, Stacy?
I was not. Had a couple of beers, that's all. When I wouldn't give him my money, he beat me up. Broke my arm and took my wallet.
How do men like you ever get on the police force?
He figured he'd cover up, so he took me and had my arm fixed at the emergency hospital. Then he drove me home. Threatened me all the way. He said, you tell anybody about this and I'll get you. That's just what he said.
I don't get it, Stacy. You know that story's a pack of lies. Why are you doing this to me?
It's the truth. And I'm going to press charges and get my money back.
$128. What have you done with it?
We can take care of the questioning, Mrs. Stacy.
I don't see you doing it. Make him tell. Where's our money?
I haven't got it.
Don't talk back to me.
Mr. Stacy, you and your wife want to file a crime report at this time.
We want to press charges.
Romero?
Yeah?
Take Mr. and Mrs. Stacy down to Record Bureau, have them make out a report for 211 and assault.
Right. Get them this way, please.
Now, listen. We're going to get action if we have to take this to the district attorney. We're not afraid of the publicity. We'll go to the newspaper if we don't get action.
Yes, ma'am.
What's it, Clark?
They're lying. I can't prove it, but they're lying.
Well, you can see the position it puts us in. If you're innocent, we'll do all we can. If you're guilty, we'll see you get everything that's coming to you.
But they're lying. You know that.
Not up to us. The court's going to have to decide.
That's it.
That's it.
No, there's no other way, Clark. We got 4,500 men in the department. We don't claim they're all saints. Once in a while, a bad cop comes along and pulls a caper, and all of us get a black eye. This book of rules is the only protection we got against that. By failing to enforce the law, you violated your duty as a police officer. Got yourself in a real mess, Clark. Like anybody else, you get a fair trial.
Does that mean I'm dropped from the force?
Now, those people have filed a crime report. Draw suspension pending the outcome of the case. After that, if you're cleared, there'll be a hearing before the Board of Rights.
Am I through right now?
You'll be booked for robbery and assault and held in county jail. The case will be presented to the district attorney tomorrow.
What can I do?
I'll have to have your badge. On the desk. Your gun? ID card.
Yeah.
On the desk.
Yeah.
All right, Joe, that's it.
Okay.
Take him.
Six p.m. Ben returned to the office, and together we took rookie police officer Russell Clark across the street to the Hall of Justice. At the county jail booking desk on the 12th floor, he was booked on suspicion of 211 PC and assault with intent to do great bodily harm. He was lodged in the cell block. Investigating charges against a police officer involves exactly the same procedure as cases where private citizens are concerned. Prove the suspect innocent or guilty. That's the job. If Clark was innocent, looked like there was only one way of proving it. That was somehow to find the unnamed doctor who was supposed to have seen Stacy fall down the auditorium stairs and then examined him afterward. If Clark was guilty, we had to find proof that his story about Stacy falling downstairs was a lie. Besides that, we had to find evidence that he beat up Stacy at the rear of the auditorium that night and that he robbed him of $128. Thursday, April 10th, Ben and I checked in for work at 7:45 a.m. and found a message from the jailer on the phone board. Clark wanted to see us right away. We met with him in the county jail, interview room.
How you doing? Not too bad.
Don't let it sour you, huh?
Sergeant, you really think I rolled that character? Come on, tell me the truth.
We checked you out. Good family. You got a fine army record. No, we don't think you did it.
I just can't understand why he picked me out. I tried to help him all I could. Then he walks in the next day with a frame story like that.
You got any idea why Stacy would pull something like this on you?
I don't know. I'm worried, Sergeant. Believe me, I can't afford to sit here missing my pay. We live pretty close to the budget with a baby coming. I'm worried about the wife. I just don't know what to do.
Are you sure you told us everything about this that you remember?
Well, that's the one reason I wanted to see you. I didn't sleep much last night. I kept trying to remember the name of that doctor.
Yeah?
Well, I remember once he did mention his name, and then when I asked for his identification, he showed me one of his cards.
Any idea what his name was?
Well, I'm not sure, but as I remembered, it was some kind of a Swedish or Norwegian name, something like Johnson, Tollison, you know, something with a son on the end of it. It's on that card.
That doesn't narrow it down too much. Where is the card?
Well, I think I put his card in one of the pockets of my other uniform shirt. That's why I called you. I wonder if you could check that for me. It's at home.
Sure. Where do you live?
Out on Norwich Road, 411. It's right near the Coliseum.
411.
Yeah.
All right, we'll check it out for you.
Just ask the wife, will you? Card should be in one of the pockets.
Yeah, if you put it there. Ben and I left the interview room at the county jail and drove out to the home of Officer Clark on Norwich Road. We introduced ourselves to his wife and told her what we were after. Her eyes were red and looked like she'd been crying. She asked about her husband. We told her he was all right.
They're making a terrible mistake, Sergeant. Russ never did anything crooked in his life. He didn't do it. I know he didn't.
We'll do everything we can to straighten it out, Mrs. Clark. The court will have the final say.
I knew Russ shouldn't have left his insurance job. I just knew it, all this trouble.
How about that shirt that your husband told us about, the one he wore that night at the auditorium?
Oh, yes, his other uniform shirt.
Mm-hmm. Can we see it, please?
Oh, yes, certainly. It's right this way, back in bedroom. What's so important about the shirt, Sergeant?
Your husband told us that there might be a card in one of the pockets. Might help clear up things.
Well, it should be hanging up here in the closet. I always like to keep Russ's shirts on hangers. He keeps them much nicer looking.
What's the matter?
This morning I sent it to the cleaners.
Clark's wife, Ben, and I drove down to a dry cleaning shop a few blocks away where Mrs. Clark had left the shirt. The counter girl there told us that the truck had already been by that morning and picked up the day's cleaning. It was a store rule to check all garments for contents. She had found nothing. We got the address of the main plant, the Great Northern Dry Cleaners, a place down on Factory Street. 10:15 a.m. We checked in at the main plant and explained to the manager what we were after. We gave him the tag number of her cleaning, and Mrs. Clark gave him the description of the shirt. We waited in the manager's office while he made a search for the dark blue wool police shirt.
How about this one, lady? It's the only blue wool shirt picked up at your cleaner's this morning.
Yes, that's Russ's shirt. That pocket flap there, I mended it.
I'll check the pockets for you. I had to pull it out of the tank. It's all wet.
Anything?
Not in this pocket. Try the other one.
Yeah?
Look for yourself.
Nothing.
You are listening to Dragnet, the case history of a police investigation, presented in the public interest by Fatima Cigarettes.
If you smoke a long cigarette, it will be in your interest to listen to a typical case history of a Fatima smoker.
It's the case of Northwest Airlines stewardess Jean Madsen. This is her actual signed statement.
There's one thing I really look forward to after a long flight. A good mild smoke. That's why I prefer the new king-size Fatima. It's milder than any other long cigarette I've tried. Yes, I agree. It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
And so do more and more smokers every day. Actual figures show extra mild Fatima has more than doubled its smokers coast to coast.
So enjoy extra mild Fatima yourself.
The king-size cigarette, which contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos, superbly blended to make it extra mild.
You will prefer Fatima's much different, much better flavor.
You will agree.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
The best of all long cigarettes.
Thursday, April 10th. Shortly after noon, the daily newspapers were on the streets, and the head on one of the top front page stories read, "Rookie cop slugs rob citizen." Ben and I went back to the county jail and told Clark that we'd failed to find the card. He could give us no other lead that might help in clearing the case. During the next 2 days that followed, Ben and I ran down every possible lead, no matter how remote it was. We made a thorough check on Mr. and Mrs. Stacy. We double-checked back on Clark's record. For one full day, we did nothing but phone doctors in and around the city of Los Angeles. From a list of hundreds, we came across three doctors who had been present at the fights in Olympic Auditorium on the night Stacy claimed he was beaten up and robbed by Officer Clark. None of the three had seen a man tumble down the stairway leading from the balcony to the lobby. None of them had seen any accident or had been called on to help anyone professionally. Monday, April 14th, we met with Lieutenant Ralph Drummond.
No go, huh?
That's got us, Ralph. We can't figure. It's almost a fact Stacy's lying.
Clark, what about him?
Well, there's still nothing to show that he didn't do it. He had the opportunity. Maybe he had a motive. He needs money, you know.
Who doesn't? How much you get on Stacy?
He and his wife run a secondhand furniture store in South Flower. It's a small business. Stacy's quite a gambler. He bets on the fights.
Yeah?
We checked around with some of the gang down at the auditorium. Stacy's well known down there. He laid some pretty heavy bets the night he claims Clark rolled him.
How much?
You got the dope there, Ben. How's it figure out?
Well, he lost over $75 in small amounts. Add to that the fact that he was doing some partying. That might account for the 128 that's missing.
Stacy blew the roll, was afraid to tell his wife, so he cooked up the story against Clark.
Yeah, sure. Maybe that could have been the way it happened.
What do you got on the other side?
Not much, Ralph. Couldn't dig up anything against Clark. I don't know. He doesn't seem like the type to pull something like that.
Maybe not. You still can't prove he didn't do it. How about the papers? You've been plugging for witnesses?
Yeah. Here's the ad. Had it running in personals for 4 days now.
Thanks. All those saw men fall down the stairway. The auditorium. Please call Michigan 521-875.
No results, sir. No. All the possible doctors in town have been checked out, too.
How about the local medical magazines?
Got an ad in there, Ralph. Nothing's happened.
Well, one thing is sure. Something's got to happen. Newspapers are scorching the kid and the department along with him. A victim without a trial makes good reading in the tabloids.
There's one thing I can't understand. If Clark's leveling and there was a doctor at the fights that might have looked at Stacy, then where's the doctor? We've had this thing noised all around town.
Well, give it a little more time. He might turn up. I kind of like the Stacy angle.
What do you mean?
Well, suppose we get him in here. Think we could break him down into questioning?
No, I doubt that. We can't even get close to him. That wife of his and that lawyer, they're with him all the time. He's afraid to talk to us.
Maybe if we pass the word to his wife he'd been gambling, how far could we go on that?
Well, she might believe us, she might not. You've seen what she's like.
Yeah. I got an idea. He sold her on a story, and she's tagging along to get the $128 back.
It gives me an idea, Joe. One thing we might have missed.
Yeah, what's that?
We found out that Stacy did a little partying before he went to the fights at the auditorium that night, didn't we?
Yeah, go ahead.
We checked out a couple of the bars he was drinking at, but we figure he must have parted away at least $50 out of that $128.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't spend that much at the bars.
Oh, well, sure. He probably hit a few other places, too.
That's what I mean. That's still a lot of money to drink up alone.
You figure a woman?
Maybe.
You got any reason to think Stacy plays around?
Just one.
Yeah?
His wife.
Monday, 1 p.m. Ben and I started to canvass of bars and small nightclubs in the general area around the Olympic Auditorium. We started with those where Stacy was a regular customer. We failed to turn up any leads. Either the bartenders refused to tell us or they had no knowledge of Stacy's running around with other women. We kept at it. Another day passed. 2 days. Nothing. One of the newspapers started a campaign against the brutality of police officers. On Thursday, we got a tip from a bartender at a place out on Washington Street, the Brown Cow. He told us that he thought he saw a man answering Stacy's description in his bar a few nights before with a flashy blonde in her late 20s. He said he didn't know Stacy too well, but he knew the girl, and he knew the hotel where she stayed. Her name was Sandra Gay, an acrobatic specialty dancer at a cheap nightclub. We checked out her hotel, but she wasn't in. We left word for her to get in touch with us, and then we picked up a hamburger and some potato salad for lunch and checked back in at the office.
How you doing, Coleman?
Not as good as you two.
How do you mean?
Can't you smell the perfume?
Hmm?
It's off a blonde named Sandra Gay. She's waiting in the next room. Won't talk to anybody but you.
Thanks. Come on, Ben. Didn't waste much time, did she?
Perfume. Sure strong.
Your name, Sandra Gay?
Yeah, that's right. You the fellas been looking for me?
Drop by your hotel. We'd like to ask you a few questions.
Sure, it's all right.
This is my partner, Sergeant Romero. My name's Friday.
How do you do?
Hello. Romero. Kind of cute for a cop. What can I help you with?
Do you know anybody by the name of Gerald Stacy, Miss Gay?
Gerald, yeah, I hate that name.
Do you know any man who calls himself that?
No. I think that's a terrible name for a man, Gerald.
The man we have in mind is pretty short, stocky build, dark hair, and he wears steel-rimmed glasses.
Yeah, where's he hang out?
Place out in Washington, the Brown Cow. Supposed to have been seen with you. Gerald Stacy.
Oh, yeah, I think I know who you mean. Furniture business and runs a place near the Brown Cow.
That's right, you know him?
Old Pop, sure I know him. We get together once in a while, he's a kick.
Pretty big spender?
Yeah, he's got it, yeah. Last time we went out, he was fine. He can kick it around when he wants to. Oh, Pops.
When's the last time you were out with him, Miss Gay?
Maybe a week, 2 weeks ago. It was a Tuesday night, I think, yeah.
Tuesday the 8th? Is that about right?
Yeah, it must have been. Why, what's it all about?
Did you spend most of the evening with him?
No, I had to get back to the club to do my act. He went on to the fights over at Olympia.
I get it. Personnel, Friday.
Is this Sergeant Friday?
Yes, that's right.
This is Dr. Samuelson talking, Sergeant. I've been out of town. I just got back this morning. I saw the ad in the paper.
Yes, sir?
I was at the fights that night, Sergeant. What is it you want to know?
Would you mind telling us, Doctor, did you see a man fall down one of the stairways to the lobby?
Certainly. I was the one who examined him.
Five p.m. Mr. and Mrs. Stacy were called to Lieutenant Drummond's office. Arrangements were made to have Officer Russell Clark brought over from his cell in county jail. At 5:15, Ben and I checked into the lieutenant's office. Stacy and his wife were already there.
I'm certainly proud of our police department, Chief. No whitewashing this time. You gave that fellow exactly what he had coming.
Thanks. You sure you didn't make a mistake?
I'm sure, Chief. That's the right man. You got him.
Jerry, don't make mistakes on things like this, Inspector. How about our money, the 128? Did he tell you where he hid it?
No, he hasn't. We'll bring Officer Clark in from county jail. Figure we try to crack him.
That's right. Make him tell what he did with our money.
Joe, will you have Officer Clark brought in?
By the way.
All right.
There he is. Where's our money? What have you done with it?
Just a minute, please. Stacy, are you sure Officer Clark here is the man who beat you up and robbed you?
Of course he is. Dragged me behind the auditorium and almost beat me to death. Broke my arm, took all my money.
$128, where is it?
I haven't got your money. Joe, bring the doctor in.
All right, Lieutenant.
In here, Doc.
All right. Mr. Stacy, you're a liar. This officer didn't break your arm. I saw you fall down a flight of stairs at that auditorium and break your own arm. I examined it.
Jerry, who is this man?
What about it, Stacy?
He doesn't know what he's talking about. I never saw him before in my life.
No, but I've seen you, Stacy. You were drunk. I saw you fall down those stairs.
You're crazy.
Joe, send Miss Gay in.
All right.
All right, Miss Gay.
Okay, thanks.
Pure strong perfume.
You recognize any of these people, Miss Gay?
Hello, Pops.
I don't know you.
Don't you remember the perfume you give it to me?
Who is this woman?
Just a friend, honey.
All right, Stacy, now let's have it straight.
It was all a mistake. I don't want to make trouble for anybody. It wasn't this cop's fault. I don't want to make any trouble.
What about this woman?
It was all a mistake, believe me.
You took that money, Gerald. You spent it on her.
Now, wait a minute.
Causing all this trouble, squandering our money. After all I did for you, you're no good. This time I'm through.
All right, Clark, let's go.
Okay.
Well, that's it.
I don't know how to thank you, fellas.
And doctor's the best friend you got.
Yeah. Yeah, I better call a wife she'll want to know.
Friday, phone message for you here.
Oh, thank you. From your wife, Clark.
Yeah?
She found that doctor's card.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On September 2nd, trial was held in Municipal Court, Division 7, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial.
It's amazing how many long cigarette smokers are changing to extra mild Fatima. Here is the actual report.
From coast to coast, extra mild Fatima has more than doubled its smokers.
Yes, more and more smokers every day are discovering that Fatima is the king-size cigarette that is extra mild.
Extra mild because it contains the finest Turkish and domestic tobaccos superbly blended to make it extra mild, to give it a much different, much better flavor and aroma.
Enjoy extra mild Fatima yourself. Best of all long cigarettes.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
It's wise to smoke extra mild Fatima.
Gerald Stacy was tried on charges of filing a false crime report. He was convicted under Section 5250 LAMC and served his term as prescribed by law. Officer Russell Clark was returned to duty with full back pay.
Ladies and gentlemen, in response to thousands of letters asking us to broadcast Dragnet at an earlier hour so that the entire family might hear it, we wish to announce that summer scheduling enables us to fulfill these requests. Beginning next Thursday, June 8th, Fatima Cigarettes will bring you Dragnet 1/2 hour earlier over most of these stations. Consult your local newspaper for exact time.
You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.A. Wharton, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
Hear your favorite Jack Birch tomorrow on NBC.